I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views. This special bonus edition of Parallax Views, we are joined by a guest that I am honored to welcome to the program. She is an activist, author, and the third daughter of the human rights icon, Malcolm X, Ilyasa Shabazz. She has dedicated her life to leveraging the legacy of her parents, Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz, to empower the future and uplift people from all walks of life, especially children and young adults. In 2002, with the help of Kim McLaren, she wrote the critically acclaimed Growing Up X, a memoir by the daughter of Malcolm X. She then followed that up with the children's book, Malcolm Little, the boy who would grow up to become Malcolm X, X, a novel, and Betty Before Malcolm. Ilyasa joins us to discuss the legacy of her father and the continued fight for justice in light of the police killing of George Floyd on this edition of Parallax Views. And now, without any further ado, my conversation with Ilyasa Shabazz, activist, author, and the third daughter of the human rights icon, Malcolm X. Welcome to Parallax Views, activist, author, and professor at John Jay College, Ilyasa Shabazz.
Hello, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So, Ilyasa, I didn't know whether or not I should say in the intro, the third daughter of Malcolm X. I feel like you're much more than that. But it's obvious that, you know, you sort of grew up with one of the icons of the civil rights movement as your father. Maybe you could talk a little bit, though, first, before we get into Malcolm X, about your mother, Betty Shabazz, because I feel like she's a very important part of your life and also Malcolm's life.
Okay. So I didn't hear that last part. And so you would like me to talk about my mom?
Yes, Betty.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me also say, it is really such an honor to be my father's daughter. So I, you know, when people say this, you know, she's Malcolm X's daughter, there are six of us. You know, I'm never at all insulted by it at all. I'm happy. I'm honored because, you know, I realized that I was so fortunate to have my parents, as my role models, as, the ones who gave me, you know, my sense of identity, purpose, education. And it's the reason that I chose to author these books. I have five books. I have another one that comes out in January. And I'm a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. I love my students immensely. I believe that every child deserves an opportunity to know that they're worthy of self-love, of a quality education, so that they can participate in mainstream society if they so, you know, if they so desire, mainstream economy. My mother, I'm grateful, so grateful to have had her. Yeah, because she made sure that, you know, I grew up, my sisters and I, that we all, we learned about the significant contributions that women made to the world, the significant contributions that people of the African diaspora made to the world, and the significant contributions of Islam that Muslims made to the world. And so I grew up with a really good, healthy sense of me. And I came to understand that, you know, if I don't love me, then I won't love you. If I don't love me, I can't help you. If I don't love me, I'll never unite with you. And so when we look at the unfortunate injustice that is a part of our everyday existence, the only way we're going to change it is by standing strong in our identity with like-minded people and having a checklist of the things that we need to accomplish together so that we can live our life without challenging injustice. Wouldn't that be, you know, wonderful and great? And my father said it will be this generation that will make the greatest change.
Now, in regards to your father, I know you grew up, really he wasn't around in your life. He was, he died very young, right? And I'm curious, how did you sort of get to know your father? I know that Betty Shabazz, your mother, didn't portray him as merely a political figure to you or your sisters.
Right. You know, so I grew up, my sisters and I, we grew up understanding our father's humanity. You know, we knew that that he was an avid reader. We knew that he had a butterfly collection, you know, that we had in our house, a really beautiful, you know, encased in this mahogany wood with these vibrant colored butterflies. It was, you know, beautiful. So we knew about our father's humanity. He was very compassionate. And we knew he made some kind of contribution, you know, to end injustice or anything that was, you know, bad, right? And it wasn't until I went to college that I learned about Malcolm the Icon, because, you know, my mother just chose to raise us with an abundance of love and compassion. And so she worked on, you know, making sure that we had our core values intact.
I was going to ask, before we get into how you learned about your father as sort of the icon in college, one thing that really aggravates me about the way Malcolm X is often portrayed in popular media or in popular history books is that we're sort of given this image of just a very militant man. When it sounds like, you know, he was a very loving man, a very compassionate man, a very humorous man. And I think it's a disservice to him, almost like a second death, to treat him merely as the militant civil rights leader.
Well, I think it's a disservice to future generations. And so that's the reason why I do the work that I do, because it's an effort to portray an image of him that is absolutely false, you know? And so we have been able to witness some of the corruption, right, that exists. And that is the reason why a lot of young people are protesting. You know, we saw this young man's life just snatched away from him during a time when there's a global pandemic. And, you know, we're self-isolating because we don't know, are we next, you know, with this pandemic? And so to watch the life just taken from someone so horrendously, that, you know, that was just really, my God, I'm so glad that people were outraged by it and that they chose to do something about it.
In regards to learning about your father, it's an interesting story to me that you learned about him in college. You're sort of learning about him secondhand in a way. Maybe you could talk about that experience. It sounds very interesting.
Well, I don't know if it was so much secondhand, because really what I was learning about was the injustices. You know, I was learning about systemic racism at its height. I knew that it was in the late 50s when the world learned of my father, that he was just in his 20s, and that there were young people marching, demonstrating, protesting for quality life, much like today, quality education, quality health care, housing, etc. And my father came along and said, listen, we demand our human rights as your brother. We demand our human rights ordained by God. And so being able to shine a light on the injustice, you know, it wasn't my father. Let's put him in context. And so when my mother made sure that we learned of our father, we learned of these kinds of things, of what my father stood for. We didn't learn about, you know, the systemic corruption, right? Mm-hmm. She wanted to make sure that we were first, you know, solid with who we were as women, as people of the African diaspora, and as Muslim girls. And you know, really, those are like the bottom, that's at the bottom. Each one of those categories is at the bottom, you know, but yet we were raised feeling very proud of, you know, with who we are, and not to allow someone else to determine not to rely on someone else to determine our worth.
So was there any, what was it like when you first read the autobiography of Malcolm X, when you started talking more about him in college? I'm curious as to that experience, maybe.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was an emotional experience for me because I thought, my goodness, this was such a young, you know, I saw my father as being kind, loving, pure, because he sacrificed himself and challenged, you know, those in power. He challenged truth to power. And so to read about how he was killed and that there was no one there to protect him or save him, and to finally look at the picture of him on the stretcher, it was a little bit of an emotional experience for me. And then to read about how lonely he was while he was doing this work, and just looking at his humanity, you know, was a bit of a roller coaster, you know, for me.
Now, I know you ended up writing the memoir, Growing Up X, but my favorite book of yours is by far Malcolm Little, which is a children's book about the childhood of Malcolm X, how he became the man he became. And I think it's interesting because when I tell people about that book, they'll always say to me, how can you make a children's book about Malcolm X? And I'm like, well, everyone's a child at some point. Comment on that book and how it came together.
You know, it is so funny. And that just goes to show that there was an image that was created of Malcolm that was so inaccurate. And so even when I wanted to do this children's book because of a book that I read of my father's childhood, and I said, my gosh, this is absolutely not true. You know, Malcolm was compassionate. He was just really amazing. And his parents instilled specific values in him in order, the book is called Malcolm Little, The Boy Who Grew Up to Become Malcolm X. And so in order for him to grow up and sacrifice himself and live the life that he lived, don't forget that when we see him, he is often reacting to some atrocious injustice that's inflicted on people. You know, he's reacting to much like we saw George Floyd being killed with fire hoses extinguished at the highest power that could rip off your skin on children, on nonviolent marching people, women, elders, children, men. And so it's my father's profound reaction because of his compassion, because of his love, you know, that he was able to sacrifice himself and do the work because he was brilliant. And, you know, he could have very easily just gone and gotten a job and made a lot of money and stayed here with his family. But he was a visionary and he wanted change. And he did not believe in the kinds of injustices or any injustices of any kind, but especially what was happening in the 1950s and prior. You know, we forget about the horrors of slavery. You know, we forget about the horrors of Jim Crow. We forget about the horrors of lynching. And if you listen to any old music, you can hear the stories. If you listen to gospel music, you can hear the stories of this fear, of this, you know, of the horrors that were, that was existing. If you think of even why was Dr. King in existence? Why was there a Harriet Tubman? Why was, what was Frederick Douglass talking about? Why did Nat Turner, Reverend Nat Turner, lead a revolt to free the slave, the enslaved people out of bondage? So to think that we can't write a story of Malcolm, we want to know who, what were the values that were instilled in this young man that he would have this profound affinity for education, literary, justice, compassion, responsibility, you know, all of these things. And so, again, it says that we have been sadly misinformed and, as my father said, hoodwinked, bamboozled, and led astray.
Now, you've also, I believe, given readings of Malcolm Little and some of your other books to young audiences. What has that experience been like? I'm assuming it's a great experience to be able to read to kids.
It really is. You know, it's so funny. I didn't want to tell them that Malcolm is my father or that he's not here anymore, because to them, Malcolm, when I went on this tour, and especially on the West Coast, they thought that Malcolm was like a rock star, you know, and that I wrote this book and that I was related to him. I have some really amazing photographs where they're kind of like trying to size me up and try to, you know, really put the picture together with the relation between Malcolm and me. So Malcolm is, it's like a little hero to them, because his work and his compassion and his thoughts and so forth resonates with young people. And it's all about, you know, the importance of love, the importance of literary reading. You know, Malcolm was the president of his young class. He wanted to be a lawyer. He was Robin Hood when the kids would come over to their house. He was a natural born leader, just so many things. And he was just charming, brilliant. He came from a large family. And I usually say, those who come from a large family, you know, we are social butterflies, so to speak, as compared to come from a single
family.
You
cut out for a second there. You said we're social butterflies compared to?
I said that usually those who come from large families are very sociable, you know, personable, really interesting, right? Compared to those who are single child, you know, who don't have siblings, because then you learn how to just to be with yourself, to entertain yourself. But with my father coming from a large family of seven, of eight, you know, people just loved him. And they gravitated towards him. He had a great personality, great sense of humor, and he was able to get people to do things, you know, as you might have read in the book, that you may not have ordinarily done.
You know, before we close out, I'm curious, what do you think Malcolm X would think about the protests happening, Black Lives Matter, and what do you think the value of Malcolm's analysis is in our current moment?
I think it's very extremely valuable and point on, head on, point on. You know, he said that this generation would rise up and they would recognize that those who are in power have misused power and that it must change. And they realize the only way it's going to change is by getting out there and doing the work themselves, and that we shouldn't be fearful, you know. I mean, because I think at the end of the day, we are loving, compassionate people. We understand the oneness of man, the oneness of woman, that we are all God's children. You know, there are people who have blonde hair. There are people who have black hair. There are people who have red hair. And, you know, that makes, that's the beauty of America. It's the beauty of our world. And, you know, to live with one another, but more importantly, to recognize the humanity and one another. And so it seems as though that's what this generation is doing. Otherwise, you know, it's, yeah.
Well, I was just going to add to that, that I think people focus on the fact that your father very much wanted the best for his community. But I mean, he was an ardent supporter of human rights for all people.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Listen, it was just a few years out of slavery. It was just a few years out of Jim Crow. And that was my father's experience, right? Most people who left the South and came North, they didn't come because of job opportunities. They fled because of lynching. The trauma of being lynched, with no one to protect you. There was no law that protected you against being snatched and being lynched. We know what happened in Tulsa. We know what happened in Oakwood, where there were bombs. Black thriving communities were bombed. You know, their homes were set on fire. They lost everything. That's constant fear to live your life like that day in and day out. So my father fought against this kind of injustice against his people, but against all people, because he believed in the oneness of God and he believed in the oneness of man. And so he believed in, you know, that we should all have the opportunity to have an education that's based on truth, right? If we understand, if we knew about that the bombing in Tulsa and the bombing in Rosewood, as much as we knew about the Boston Tea Party and Boston, you know, then that would allow opportunity to have an inclusive education rather focus on 1 month that's dedicated to learning anything about Black history. We would know who Malcolm is. We would know who Harriet is. We would know what slavery was about. We would know about the Axum empires in Africa, where humanity first began. You know, we would know about, you know, just so many things. And so he just believed that our children should have a quality education that's based on truth, so that we could be our best selves and not live a life seeking justice, but that our life could be focused on investing in ourselves, living a great life, focusing on our passions, joys, and purpose.
If I could, I just wanted to, I had two questions that my listeners wanted me to ask you, if I could really briefly. The first was, I wanted to know about your experience. I believe you went on the pilgrimage to Mecca, much like your father did. And that seemed like a very pivotal moment for your father. What was your experience with that like?
Well, I could tell you, well, it was just absolutely amazing. But I can see why it was such a pivotal moment for my father. You know, I had to put it all in perspective. And my father was born in 1925 in Michigan. I'm sorry, in Omaha, Nebraska, middle America. And he lived through Jim Crow. He always knew that there was a role for Blacks and a role for whites. And he saw the injustice, you know, for as long as he could remember. And to go abroad and see Blacks, whites, not like the way Blacks and whites lived in America, but in the same religion, praying together, eating together, that had to have been such, you know, an eye-opening experience for him, having thought or having seen white people in a particular light. So it was pivotal for him. It was really, it was amazing for me. Yeah.
And I guess my last question for you to close out is, Do you think there's a lot of hope for the future, not just for the human rights that Malcolm X wanted to see achieved socially in our world, but just for the people that are activists today? It seems really hard to talk about these things for a lot of people. The injustice, what has happened to George Floyd, it gets a lot of people upset, and we have to talk about it. Do you think we're going to make the necessary improvements?
The only way we're going to make improvements is by doing the work ourselves, right? We can't just sit back and think that someone is going to change, you know, these things for us. There's George Floyd. There are so many others. I'm sure every time you open your phone and go onto your Instagram or anywhere, right, you see a new killing. And it's so difficult to watch. And the only way it's going to end is when we get out there and we do something about it. And so, again, I commend this generation of young people who are out there, who understand that they have to have a checklist, they have to be organized, they have to strategize. You know, in that Malcolm X film where you saw my father outside the hospital demanding proper medical care for Hinton Johnson, who was, the police had beat so, you know, badly, they damaged his brain, his skull had been crushed. He got all of those people out there because he was organized and strategic. Each person was accountable for contacting two people. So in a matter of minutes, they had hundreds of people out there, and they believed in my father, they trusted my father, and they followed his lead. And so if we want to make any kind of change, we have to understand that we can't pull our individual selves up by our own bootstraps. We have to subscribe to that proverb that it takes a village to raise a child. We can only accomplish anything by being together. Forget about the distractions, because that's what is continually put out there for us, to be distracted by so many things. You have to stay focused, stay organized, stay with like-minded people, have your checklist, and don't stop until you've accomplished your goals.
I'm sure you've seen a lot of that in your students. I know a lot of these young people and people like myself are hungry for that justice. And I'm assuming you see that a lot with your students at John Jay.
That's right. I sure do. And, you know, it is one of the reasons why we have to be educated on a lot of these issues, because if we're improperly educated, then we aren't allowed to fully evolve all of our senses. Right? We're not able to make the change that needs to. And then we find, you know, towards the end of our lives that we focused on the wrong things. And so I know one of I just finished doing the audible for Growing Up X. And I had a professor at a young age who used to always say, "You will regret." And so I had vowed at a very young age that I would never be that person that regretted doing anything. And so it's important that we learn as much as we can and that we make as much change that we can. And we can only do it together. We can't do it individually.
Well, I want to thank you, Ilyasa Shabazz, for coming on Parallax Views. If you could, let my listeners know how they can follow your work, how they can buy your books, anything like that.
Yeah. Okay. So I am Ilyasa Shabazz. And if you can't spell it, it's growingupx.com. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm everywhere, really. I have a website. And listen, you know, I just believe that every child deserves the opportunity to know that they're worthy of love. And all I want to do is see young people smile, happy, and find your voice so that you can make change.
Well, thank you again, Ilyasa, for joining us on Parallax Views.
Thank you.
Well, that does it for this very special bonus edition of Parallax Views. I cannot thank Ilyasa Shabazz enough for coming on the program, joining us to share the legacy of her father and how she is using that legacy to empower the future and uplift the spirits of people around the world, again, especially children and young adults. If you haven't gotten a hold of Malcolm Little, the boy who grew up to become Malcolm X, it is a great read for children. I cannot recommend it enough. So check that out. I am so happy to have had the chance to speak to Ilyasa. I'm glad we got to talk about not only Malcolm X, her father, but also her mother, Betty Shabazz. It was a truly rewarding experience, and it means a great deal that she came on the program. And I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed conducting the interview. As always, let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax or by email at ParallaxViewsPod@ProtonMail.com. Also, if you can, please consider supporting me on Patreon. It is the Patreon supporters of this show that allow me to do this program full time. So if you want to contribute to Parallax Views on Patreon, just hit up patreon.com/parallaxviews. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views to Parallax Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.